sexual assault in the community and on campus. Yesterday, the NCAA issued a new handbook on how college athletic departments should handle sexual assaults, calling for staff and athletes to understand the issues and know how to respond as bystanders, find help, and work with campus authorities. Earlier this year, the U.S. Department of Education listed 55 colleges that are under investigation for possible violations of federal law in how they handled harassment complaints and reports of sexual violence. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on Maine Calling, we'll hear from school administrators from around the state about how they are addressing the problem of sexual assault, and we have several educators whose work focuses on the issues of consent, sexual assault, and bystander intervention. Maine Calling is next. First, these news headlines. From the MPBN studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Last week, the internet was abuzz over a nail polish that students at North Carolina State University claimed to have developed that would change color if it detected a date rape drug. Although the efficacy of the nail polish has come into question, the larger issue is that there is a need for such a product. As students go back to classes in colleges and universities, many school administrators are trying to determine how best to prevent sexual assaults. Today we'll hear from a number of school administrators. In the studio with me also, Shana Nadelson, Executive Director of Speak About It, an organization we'll learn more about in just a moment, and Carlin Whitehouse. He's a youth educator at Family Crisis Services. And as always, we want to hear from you. What do you think can and should be done to combat sexual assault? Our number, 800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email address, talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Maine Calling Facebook page. And just a note here, we are having some technical issues with our Portland signal. That's WMEA. It is dropping out and we are working on it. So we just wanted to let you know that. Shana Nadelson, Carlin Whitehouse, welcome to Maine Calling, first of all.
Thank you.
Shana, tell us about your organization. What does Speak About It do?
Absolutely, yeah. Thanks for having us here. I'm really excited to be on the air and have this conversation locally in Portland and also statewide and the larger implications across the country. So thank you for having us here. Speak About It is a performance-based presentation about consent education and sexual assault prevention, specifically for high school and college students. So we recommend having this conversation with mature high school audiences, juniors and seniors, and then college first years. We're also cracking into Greek life, athletics, these different communities where people feel safe and people feel like they have a voice and their voice matters. And how do you spark this conversation in those familiar places? So we actually, radio folks can't see me, but I look a bit like a zombie. I just wrapped 14 days on the road. We have 15 actors that work for the organization right now. We were just at 20 schools and presented to almost 23,000 college students in the past really 12 days. So,
yeah. So and how does that, like, do the performances sort of communicate or educate in a way that, you know, direct lecturing or materials just don't do?
It's a combination of skits and monologues. So we have stories that have been submitted to us by students about their experiences with sex. And we try to kind of cover the gamut here. People who are waiting for marriage, people who are having really great sexual experiences, survivors of sexual assault. We are big believers in healthy sexuality as a form of primary prevention. So being able to know where your boundaries are and what you're comfortable with, what consent means to you, how to communicate that. That conversation in and of itself is a form of sexual assault prevention because you're more comfortable in your body. All of our actors are in their 20s. So we look like college students, and it's fun and funny and entertaining. So, for example, we were just at Harvard, and we want to be there and talk about what consent is at Harvard, what the resources are specific to those students, that if someone wants to reach out to someone in their community, who those people are, and also being able to speak like we're upperclassmen. So we go to Harvard, and we make fun of Yale for the first 15 minutes, and it's easier, we find, to have students paying attention when we're talking about sexual assault once we've already engaged them through humor and familiarity. So I like alliteration. I say it's entertaining, educational, and empowering.
Triple E.
Triple E.
Carlin Whitehouse, tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
Sure. So I work for Family Crisis Services. They're the local Domestic Violence Resource Center that serves Cumberland County. About 15 years ago, our executive director, Lois Reckitt, really made a push to create an organization within Family Crisis that did prevention education. You can be down the river and affecting a lot of change, helping people in need, but going up the river and really going to the source and trying to plant seeds in young people as early as possible. So the biggest meat of our work is in health classes, middle school, high school, and we actually use a little bit of quite a lot of theater as well. It's just such a great vehicle for delivering a powerful message and getting folks loosened up. It's really fantastic work. I've been doing it for 5 years, and personally, I've made a huge leaps and bounds understanding domestic violence, dating abuse, and sexual assault as well.
So it seems to me, just as a person who covers this in the news regularly, that there has to be more awareness around these issues. It's talked about a lot more than it was when, in the dark ages when I was going through school. It seems to be reported more often. You can challenge me on that. I don't know. But is there a connection, though, between that increased awareness and a decline in the actual abuses, the crimes, the assaults?
So that's really tricky. Sexual assault is a hugely underreported crime. Sexual assault, rape, sexual misconduct, very underreported. And it's hard to track those numbers. So like you said, there have been an increase in reports over the past few years. And I think there are different theories out there as to why that's the case. I think because there's been more conversation about it and we now have more resources available to survivors, that's when these conversations are happening more. That if people know that they can disclose to someone and they're going to be believed and their story is going to be validated, they're more likely to tell that story. And I think that's where we're seeing this increase in reports. I also actually, this is a great segue. Maine has some really incredible resources for survivors of sexual assault, partners of survivors, friends of survivors. And I just want to toss out there's a statewide organization called the Maine Coalition of Sexual Assault. And they have a 24-hour hotline that if anybody listening wants to make a phone call that they would like to reach out to someone and talk about something that's happened or an experience that they've had, that number is 1-800-871-7741. And that's the Maine Coalition Against Sexual Assault. And they're a really fantastic resource here in Maine.
And we'll post that on our Facebook page. Fantastic. And have that information out there for us as well. Good time maybe to go now to Dr. Robert Dana. He's Vice President of Student Life and Dean of Students at the University of Maine. He joins us by phone. Dr. Dana, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you very much, Keith.
I know that you were speaking about the increase in awareness through media. You were featured in a national story on NPR yesterday looking at what colleges are kind of going through with respect to sexual assault allegations and what some of the repercussions are for that for schools. And you were part of that story. But tell us, first of all, what's happening at UMaine around this issue? What are the sort of the top-of-mind issues that schools are facing as we enter the school year?
Well, the first thing we're essentially concerned with is that students come and start effectively talking about this, because historically, as young people develop, they're not talking about the big, complicated adult issues. So they're not talking about their sexuality, they're not talking about sexual relationships, and they're certainly not talking about what is sexual assault. So our first order of business is to get people to begin difficult discussion about who do I want to be with, where do I want to be with people, how do I want this to occur, what is consent, what does yes mean, do I understand when I'm being told no. And students can engage that discussion, but it's different than what they're used to. So first order of business, communicate, communicate, communicate.
So is it the schools, does the school, as it's welcoming, for example, freshmen in and as part of orientation, does it include their discussion about circumstances to avoid putting yourself in? How do you get at this?
Well, for first-year students, they begin an orientation process in the summer, and then they have a second orientation when they arrive in the fall. And as part of both of those, the whole notion of relationship violence, sexual assault, stalking, all of these very complicated social issues are talked about. And they're talked both in formal settings, programmatic settings, in their resident hall settings. We have experts on campus who have responsibility for this, and the responsibility for making this a safe campus really extends to every member of the community. So, yes, they talk about it, perhaps more than they want, and we keep the discussion up because we know the first 6 weeks in college are very high risk. So first-year students are getting communicated with both on the day one, and then we'll talk to them several times through the course of the year.
I was going to say, if you were trying to create a Petri dish to generate the conditions around sexual assaults, I mean, you would include some of what happens naturally when you arrive at college. I mean, there are you're not equipped necessarily to be on your own always. You're not equipped to deal with manipulative people, with alcohol, with stress, and sort of being on your own in the world. It seems like those are a confluence of factors that could all contribute to creating an environment where this could happen.
Well, you're exactly right. There's lots of sort of testing of limits. There's people are determining who they are as young adults. They're trying to find their voice. They're learning to be assertive. And there is a culture that has to be dealt with. And in this country, there's a sexual assault culture of I can be broad in my thinking about it because young people are still socialized to engage themselves sexually, and young men are still predominantly socialized to think of sex as something that's a conquest and something that should be sought after, and that does involve trickery. So we have to begin to get people to think of each other as human beings. We want people to be civil. We want people to be communicating well, saying what they want, when they want it, but we don't want the dark side, the underbelly, if you will, of the whole developmental phenomenon.
All right. Dr. Robert Dana, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Keith.
Dr. Robert Dana, Vice President of Student Life and Dean of Students at the University of Maine. Shana, did you want to comment?
I think Dr. Dana brings up something really interesting about these students coming in and not necessarily being familiar with this and the dark underbelly of drinking and sex on college campuses. Statistically, the majority of sexual assaults on college campuses happen between two people who have some type of relationship. And I use the lowercase r relationship. So it's someone that you have a class with. It's someone that lives on your floor. It's a friend of a friend. It's very infrequently is it this stranger in a dark alley, this system of blue lights that we certainly was prevalent when I was looking at colleges was, you know, can you find these blue lights if someone jumps out of the bushes and attacks you? And on college campuses, that's not the majority of sexual assaults. And so how do we talk about this, talk about sexual assault prevention in a way that acknowledges that there are predators out there, but also recognize that the majority of assaults on college campuses it's someone familiar, someone friendly to you, someone whose first name you probably know, someone you might trust.
So it's not the scenario that we often, you know, see in even films where, you know, you're the last person at the football party, not to pick on football, but at the frat party and there's a bunch of guys there and the victim doesn't know them and it ends up being crazy.
So David Lisak, he was at UMass Amherst.
I think so, yeah.
UMass Boston. I really should know this. He did a study a few years ago talking about the undetected predator. Mm-hmm. And what he found in this study was that an overwhelming amount of sexual assaults on college campuses are perpetrated by a very small percentage of men. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to typecast and say that it's men, but predominantly the majority of sexual assaults are committed on college campuses by men.
And we have to be honest about that.
Yeah.
That's a reality. I know any defensiveness around that is really going to prevent us from moving forward.
Sure. So under the law, though, sexual assault is a sexual assault. It doesn't recognize sex. But in terms of the reality of the number of cases, it's mm-hmm. mostly males.
And so what he found was that over 90% of sexual assaults are committed by less than 5% of men. And so these are people who are going out and looking for the drunkest woman, who are giving, you know, feeding young women alcohol, feeding them drugs, isolating targets. And that's a very, very small percentage of men, but they're certainly out there. And I think that, you know, can tie into that conversation about the nail polish, but that's not the, you know, the majority of guys are good guys.
So, and you started off in the conversation saying you were talking when you're doing your sessions with kids, you do talk about sex as it can be a good thing and a healthy thing. This is not about sort of throwing cold water on sex as mm-hmm. a dangerous thing, but in these very small cases, narrow cases, this is what you need to avoid. But otherwise, it's not a topic that you should not talk about.
So my new favorite thing is realizing that the majority of people are good people. Mm. This might be naive of me, but I think that intrinsically, most people are good people. Obviously, you have bad eggs and or bad apples in every bunch, but I think for the most part, people are good people. I think right now, especially when we look at college students, high school students, people lack the language to talk about consent and bystander intervention, and they lack the confidence to be able to use it. So we don't have the language to say, you know, I would really like it if you did this to me. Can I do this? Is it okay if we do this together? How do you feel about this? Because we're being told that consent must be this robotic, contractual, it is a contract, but this like robotic, very legalese type of conversation. And it's actually much more informal than that. So giving people the language to use to be sexual beings and the confidence to be able to use it. The worst case scenario, if you ask someone for a kiss and they say no, you catch on fire. No, you don't catch on fire. No one's going to like come out of nowhere and torch you. You have a moment of awkward and then you get past it. And you know where the other person stands and you know that you're not going to inadvertently hurt someone.
All right. We're going to take a quick break when we come back. And we want to hear from you. The topic is sexual assault. And we're focusing in particular on high schools and college campuses as we enter the month of September. The number 800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Vineyard Brands, hosting a Tuscan wine dinner featuring Caparzo Brunello September 7th at Joseph's by the Sea in Old Orchard Beach, and Baxter Brewing Company in Lewiston, committed to 100% wind-powered beer production, baxterbrewing.com.
The lack of plentiful and clean drinking water has helped fuel violent conflict in many parts of the world, including Somalia.
We woke up without enough water for our children, ourselves and our animals. We save the little water we have for our children.
Global water scarcity and conflict. Next time on America Abroad.
Tune in for America Abroad tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. If you're a regular MPBN radio listener, you've heard the following phrase more than once. Support for MPBN is made possible in part by, and then the names of local businesses and organizations. These groups know well the value of MPBN in our community, the benefit of associating with our programming and reaching you, the statewide public radio audience. They chose again and again to make public radio and television part of their annual marketing effort. If you would like to learn more, please visit mpbn.net and click on Business Support to find information about the value of sponsorship, answers to frequently asked questions, and contact information, or simply call us at 1-800-884-1717 and ask for Susan Tran. Thank you for your support of public broadcasting here in Maine.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, what's being done to address sexual assault? With me in the studio, Shayna Nadelson is Executive Director of Speak About It. Carlin Whitehouse is a youth educator at Family Crisis Services. We invite you to join the conversation, as always, 800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I wanted to ask you both about this sort of what seems to me, maybe it's not a conflict here, but we are being told, and rightly so, to be careful not to blame victims for inviting assaults. And yet, at the same time, I'm sure there are parents out there who are advising their young students who are heading off to college to not put themselves in situations which are unnecessarily dangerous. So is it okay to do that, though, still, and say, look, you know, watch how much you drink. Don't be the last one to leave the party. To do that kind of instruction without saying to them, it's your fault if you get in a situation that's dangerous and you're assaulted.
I think this is a really rich conversation. I was just talking to my dad this past weekend about, you know, making sure you always lock your car because, you know, most crimes breaking into, or quote, breaking into cars are actually opportunistic when your car is left open. And so risk reduction is absolutely an important part of this. But what happens when you kind of obey all the rules of keeping yourself safe from rape and then it happens? Is it then it's your fault? Or what happens when you don't do all those things? It's really this cycle where how many college orientations, I can't even count the number of people who have told me that, you know, they've sequestered the females and the males, and the women all learn about what to do to prevent rape, and then the men talk about something completely different. They're not having these conversations, practicing talking about consent. And you bring it up to a group of guys, they'll likely chuckle and be really awkward, like, what? You want me to do that? Like, I'm not that kind of dude. Like, I just go for it. So we need to open it up and make it across the board for everybody to be talking about, both sides of it.
So as much as telling your kids, hey, avoid this situation or avoid that situation, your point is teach them, give them the language to use to talk about these sort of, which can be confusing issues of consent. We never really did it that way. There was either an understanding if you were there in some cases, you know, that it was yes. And then we got to no means no. Mm-hmm. But no means no, which is saying that over and over again, isn't quite getting to where we need to be.
I'm glad you brought that up. Speak About It. We at Speak About It are huge believers in the yes means yes policy of consent, model of consent. So instead of this, what we've been taught, which is go until you hear stop, it's don't start until you hear yes. And what does that look like? We talk a lot about sexual assault and what is that? And sexual assault very infrequently is about sex and it's mostly about power. And so regardless of what someone was wearing or if they'd had too much to drink or if they invited someone up to a room or if they were totally sober, sexual assault is about power being taken from that person. And that is why we try not to blame the survivor or victim because it's about power being taken. They weren't given a chance to consent or their consent was taken away from them. So it's giving people the language to be able to say, yes, I want this. And how do you teach that?
Let's go to the phones to Cheyenne, who is a senior at the University of Maine at Machias. Hi, Cheyenne.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Tell us what's going on at UMaine Machias. I know you have a social media campaign. Tell us a little bit about you and what you're doing there.
Well, I'm a CA, which is a community advisor. So I manage a floor in one of the dorms. And every month we have to do programming. And one of those months I decided to do a sexual assault awareness program to help raise awareness since it was Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And it actually turned out to be a lot bigger than I expected it to be. It became campus-wide. I got students to do it, faculty to do it. I got all kinds of staff to participate. And then I posted it on Facebook, and I put it on a blog, and it got a lot of attention. And it was even put up in the newspaper. And it was just to help people understand what's going on around them.
Did that suggest to you that that there was a need for it? I mean, it sounds like it became something that people seemed to need or want.
Yeah, I was actually really surprised when I was doing it that about how many people didn't understand what sexual assault meant or how often it does occur. I mean, somebody in the U.S. is assaulted every 2 minutes. And people are blown away when you give them actual statistics about how often it happens.
How would you, and this is maybe an unfair question, but how would you assess, I guess, the culture around this in your experience at UMaine Machias, and has it changed?
I think that it is changing. I think it was something that was a little bit taboo to talk about because I think in this kind of area, people are very conservative and they don't want to talk about sex. They don't want to talk about any of that. So I think it's becoming a little more accepted to talk about it, and it makes it a little easier to educate people about what consent is and about what rape is and all of those things that was a little harder to talk about before.
Right. And so what do you have going right now? Do you have any programs in place right now, or is it mostly the social media campaign?
Right now, I haven't started anything yet, but I do plan on doing another social media campaign this semester to mostly aimed for the first years, the freshmen, so that they can learn what that is, because a lot of the, what I found is the issue is that a lot of high schools don't have adequate sex education programs, and I think that's a huge deal.
So they're coming to college sort of ill-prepared, along with all the other things that they're trying to figure out.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly it, because I think, and we're doing a consent is sexy campaign here as well, teaching people what consent is and what it looks like.
Interesting. So, Cheyenne, just hang on with us just for a minute. This the theme of consent keeps coming up. I guess what I'm wondering is, why is there such confusion over it, or why does it seem to be ripe for conversation constantly in this backdrop of really emotional and difficult stuff? Consent's key.
I think the language has changed. I think the conversation has changed. So when I started to speak about it 4 years ago, we wanted to include specific language about consent on every campus we went to. And what we found is that most schools didn't have any language about consent. They only had language about sexual assault. This is what sexual assault is. This is what happens when you don't get consent. But nobody was taking the time to define consent. And that has shifted. So we've got people who are saying consent is yes means yes. Consent is a verbal or physical affirmation that people engage in, or people agree to when they want to engage in a mutually agreed upon sexual activity, is kind of the standard definition of consent right now at colleges. And so that language is changing, you know, and I think Cheyenne brought up a really great point that when you look at college first years, the sex education that they're getting is from their high school guidance counselors who are like, you will have sex and die, or from porn. And neither of those are realistic. And so we've come in with these expectations of what sex is and what it looks like for us as sexual beings. I was just telling Carlin earlier, I was reading the American College Health Survey, and they asked students how many sexual partners they'd had in the past 12 months. And over half the respondents reported having zero or one sexual partners. And then they asked them how many partners they thought their peers were having. And students reported that they thought their peers were having sex with 5, 6, 7 different partners in 12 months. And so it's this disconnect between what we're actually experiencing and what we're expecting our peers to be experiencing.
And when we don't talk about it, it leaves room for all of that false information or expectations about, you know, what a real man is supposed to be doing, or how you know, a woman is supposed to be approaching sex. It lets all that kind of come in and encroach upon your own personal freedom and decisions.
Let's go to the phones to Hancock, and Beverly joins us. Hi, Beverly. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I think my comment is teach your children well. I think that a lot of this need for respect and responsibility for others begins at home, and the children need to see their mothers, sisters, grandparents, neighbors respected, and both girls and boys need to learn respect and responsibility, and not everything should be in the purview of schools. So
yeah.
I'm not sure how anyone else feels about that, but I think it's a huge part of what needs to be in the conversation.
Okay. Thank you, Beverly. Carla?
I think that really is the heart and soul of this from a home perspective. I can speak growing up with an incredible moral fiber, you know, that was instilled in me from really early on, a really religious youth that I had. Yet, as soon as I stepped outside of my domestic home, all of a sudden I'm being bombarded with all these ideas about sex, and kids are talking about it, and you know that as a boy you're supposed to be doing it. I mean, as early as possible, as much as you can, any way you can. You're bending the rules. You're working your game, and really early on, I can remember a high school party where, you know, we all crashed out on the floor with blankets and sleeping bags, and I was making moves on a young woman that was right next to me, and I figured at any moment, of course, she was going to wake up and be totally into this. Now I look back on it, and I think about how terrified she must have been trying to pretend that she was asleep and avoid this getting any further. And I look back at that, and that is a really strong personal kind of revelation to me. And I think all of us guys need to find our entry point to why this matters, whether you have a daughter, whether you know someone who it happened to. From there, you can really make some leaps and bounds, but you have to get honest about it, and you have to really look deep inside.
All right, I want to say thank you to Cheyenne at University of Maine at Machias. We appreciate you joining us today. We're going now to Dr. Joshua Lawrence at Husson University. He's Director of Counseling Services at Husson. Dr. Lawrence, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Keith, for having me on the show. And just wanted to, echo a lot of what the speakers have said so far. I love what Shane is doing with Speak About It, and that entire group is empowering students to think about this differently. So that's very exciting.
Now, you've heard some of the conversation maybe around the fact that a lot of kids, there's some consensus that kids are arriving at college and university for their first year kind of ill-equipped to deal with this issue, to even talk about it. Has that been your experience so far at Husson? And if so, what are you doing to help with that?
Yeah, I would say it's really much more broadly based. It's endemic to our culture, and here at Husson, as well as across the nation, this has become more and more of a dialogue that's at the forefront. I would add, just before I talk about what's going on at Husson, that there are a lot of federal initiatives, and within that, Title IX and the Office of Civil Rights and the Campus Save Act are really bringing to the forefront a need to create a comprehensive system that really addresses this issue at a lot of different levels. And at Husson, the president and the provost and the dean of students have really taken that on, and we are working broadly based. I think that the work of the performers that come to students to speak as peers is essential. In addition, we are empowering the faculty and letting them know what are the expectations now under the federal guidelines, which have changed over the course of the past decade and are becoming more and more clearly understood. For example, all employees who are considered responsible employees at a university have to report to a Title IX investigator anything that they hear about sexual violence occurring on the campus or to students. And so we are in some ways now expected to act on behalf of what we hear in order to make the campus climate safer for everybody.
And I know there has been issues around colleges doing their own investigations. But talk a little bit about when you get a complaint, and it's a criminal complaint, a college is obligated to not only do what it can or investigate for disciplinary purposes, but also to report to law enforcement as well?
Those are two parallel processes. And so the university has a different set of standards that they use for investigations related to sexual violence. And the criminal side of things occurs or can occur simultaneously, but that those two do not work hand in hand. Rather, what will happen is the Title IX investigator of the university, which I am not counseling folks don't get involved in that because of conflicts of interest. What they will do is then conduct this investigation, and at different institutions they will usually gather a group of various people who will be involved in that investigation, including experts related to sexual violence and power and the cultural elements. It's important as we are proceeding with this to be able to balance the rights of the alleged victims and to protect them from further traumatization. And so we want to give them lots of choices about how much they decide to reveal and how much they decide to not disclose. And the federal government provides some pretty clear guidelines within their latest what's called the Q&A letter that came out from the Office of Civil Rights this past spring.
All right, Doctor, we're going to take a quick break here. Appreciate you joining us today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Dr. Joshua Lawrence, a Director of Counseling Services at Husson University. This is Maine Calling. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Hospice of Southern Maine, presenting Twilight in the Park, a celebration of life, Deering Oaks, September 27th. Learn more at hospiceofsouthernmaine.org. Bangor Savings Bank, since 1852, with 56 locations and 720 employees, Bangor Savings Bank, you matter more. And Revision Energy, now offering Own Your Power loans for solar energy systems. More at revisionenergy.com.
On the next American Radio Works documentary, there's plenty of controversy about the Common Core standards, but many teachers like them.
I was just high as a kite on what the kids had done and how engaged they were and how successful they were.
But the standards come with new tests. In some places, that means lots of test prep.
Teachers are finding that they have to do more of what they hated before.
Listen for Greater Expectations, The Challenge of the Common Core, from American Public Media.
You can hear that program immediately following Maine Calling this afternoon at 1 o'clock. There are a couple of very convenient ways for you to watch full episodes of your favorite MPBN television programs whenever you'd like. You can use the MPBN video player online at mpbn.net. Just click on Television or On Demand, and then Video On Demand, and then watch at your convenience MPBN television programs of your choice. Local MPBN and your favorite PBS programs, including an archive of past programs as well. There's also a search function. Also, if you have a Roku box, there is a PBS video app in the Roku video store that has all your favorite PBS and MPBN television programs. And Apple TV users aren't left out. You can also watch public television programs on the Apple TV PBS channel if you have the recent update. Enjoy.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. This is Maine Calling. Today on the program, how universities and colleges are addressing sexual assault. With me in the studio, Carlin Whitehouse. He's a youth educator at Family Crisis Services, and Shayna Nadelson is executive director of Speak About It. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go first to Dr. Elizabeth True, who is Vice President for Student Services and Enrollment Management at Maine Maritime Academy, also the Academy's Title IX Coordinator. Dr. True, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you, Keith. Glad to be here.
So I know that in my notes here, I know that Maine Maritime Academy has a host of programs around sexual assault for incoming students. Tell us a little bit about this issue as a priority at Maine Maritime Academy and what students are required and expected to know as they enter your school.
Certainly. Well, I think similar to the previous callers, it is important that this message comes from across the academy. And what an exciting thing that happened on our campus on Monday at convocation, our president made the bold move in his convocation speech to caution students about the importance of affirmative consent in sexual interactions. He said, "Let me pause so that my next message will sink in. Respect yourselves and be respectful of others' personal space and personal boundaries. Alcohol impairs our judgment, and we can lose track of boundaries and personal space. No means no, and you must give and receive an affirmative yes before engaging in an intimate physical relationship." And I can tell you, there were heads turning and people waking up in convocation and saying, "Did he really just say that?" It's very important that that message comes from the top. And so that's the start of our education program. But we try to infuse it throughout the rest of the orientation experience and with our faculty and throughout the year, just as the other callers have been talking about.
So what has changed to for a college president to include this warning in a convocation address? What's changed in the landscape around this to do that?
Well, I think as some people talked about earlier, we need to send a very clear message, as Cheyenne mentioned, to make sure we define what we're talking about, all aspects of sexual misconduct, and to be very clear on that. Also, as our Hudson caller talked about, we have requirements from the Office of Civil Rights, but also it's the right thing to do. We don't want to have sexual misconduct and sexual assault happening on our campuses, interfering with students' ability to get an education. And I think that all the recent press about this caused, I know, certainly our president to say, "I think I need to take a moment to make sure everyone in the room is clear on this." And it's again, a departure from the typical convocation speech, and it certainly hit home.
Are there not legal pressures, though, and federal requirements combining on schools to get out in front of this?
There are, but in many ways it's formalizing what many of us have been doing for years, because we have been fully aware of the statistics that Shana talks about and trying to do everything we can to educate students and reduce that risk on campus. So in many ways it's causing us to formalize and be more public about what we have been doing. And there's certainly the affirmative consent has gotten a lot of press lately. California just passed a law about this. And I think it is really helping students have very clear guidelines about what is acceptable and what is not.
New students at Maine Maritime are required to attend an interactive workshop. It's sort of similar to what Speak About It does.
We have several different things. We have a frank conversation, and to Carlin's point, in a mixed gender group, about these issues during orientation. The Dean of Students and I do that. We also talk with their parents about our expectations of the conversations they will have with their students. The new students then have to participate in an online course called Haven, which talks about many of the best practices that Shana and others talked about, in terms of not only defining what the rules are, but talking about culture, about our society, and more importantly, bystander intervention, which is, again, we've mentioned earlier, is a way that other students can work together to create the community they want to live in. And then finally, we do have a program very similar to Speak About It, an interactive program that all new students are required to attend in October, because orientation can be overwhelming to have all of this coming at you at once, so we want to continue throughout the year to bring up the issue.
All right, Dr. Elizabeth True, Maine Maritime Academy Vice President of Student Services and Enrollment Management, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate you being here, and you're welcome to hang on if you like. I'm going to try to take some calls. We'll go to Belgrade and Ralph. Hi, Ralph.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon.
Yes, hi. Go ahead, please.
Good. Good show. Yes, my opinion that there would be no problems in college with the students if they were a little more grown up and if they had been socialized more in high school with proper dating and more comfortable with the opposite sex and encouraged to match up at a younger age. And that way, if they go to college, they already have a girlfriend or a boyfriend. It seems a little late being in college looking for a mate. And we do have to get down to brass tacks, because that's what it's all about.
All right, Ralph? I don't want to run out of time here, so I just want to run by some of what's already been said by Dr. True and Ralph here. Shana, any thoughts?
I think, Ralph, you bring up some very interesting points. I think that one of the reasons we're focusing on college students is this is the first time for a lot of people that they've been away from home. This is the first time that they are making their own decisions about when and where they're going to eat and if they're going to do laundry and who they want to be sexual with. We've also been talking a lot about sexual assault in very heteronormative terms and very man dating woman terms. And I just want to point out to everyone that's listening and my studio mates here, that sexual assault can happen anywhere to anyone, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity, that we speak a lot about men being the main perpetrators of sexual assault, but it doesn't really matter who you are or what your body looks like or what pronouns you use. Sexual assault is universal, and therefore consent must be universal.
Can we talk a little—I'm sorry to interrupt you, yeah. But we're back to consent again, and I wanted to be more specific about this. Because when you're teaching kids about that, maybe you could just pretend we're all in your class or whatever and tell us what does consent look like or sound like?
Right. I have to remember that I'm on the radio when I do this. it's like I mentioned earlier that we've focused very much on this yes means yes. So it's asking someone a question and letting them respond to it. Can I do this? Can you touch me here? Is this okay?
Now,
do you want
people,
to engage in this
some
together?
Some people might... I'll just play devil's advocate.
Yeah.
And some people will think that that's kind of off the track of what we think of as romantic or mm-hmm. spontaneous.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to use radio-specific language in that situation. You know, you can get creative and use words that feel good to you and language that is comfortable to you and talk dirty. Talk about, you know, your body parts and what words you like for that and how that looks. Especially when you're with someone for the first time, it's so much better to ask and just make sure you're being clear, as opposed to putting yourself or your partner in a situation that's potentially dangerous, right? Most people are talking about sex. A lot of people are going to have sex at some point. If you're uncomfortable having this conversation, maybe you shouldn't, you want to hold off on engaging in these behaviors until you're comfortable having this conversation. Because if you can't talk about it, it makes it much harder to do it.
I think one of the pitfalls is when so many elder folks, I'll say, want to talk about this, they use words like Maine Maritime's president, where, yeah, you perk up and you listen because it's out of the ordinary, but then they're still using this kind of technical jargon that doesn't really resonate with reality.
What do you mean technical jargon?
Affirmative consent and
I see,
a sexually intimate encounter.
Right.
I don't know what that is.
Exactly. So, I mean, in the moment, you know, I try to joke about it a little bit. Look, we're not asking you to scratch the record, pull out a little contract and say, would you like to have sexual intercourse with me? Check yes or no. And then you're good to go. It can be as simple as in the heat of the moment when you're feeling revved up, you're leaning in and you're saying you cool with this? You want to keep going? I'm feeling awesome right now. I totally want to go farther. How about you?
So there's this TED Talk that I just saw. He's a high school teacher outside Philadelphia, and he talks about sexual education for high school students as being a conversation about baseball, right? You run the bases and you're trying to score and it's competitive. He was like, what we should be talking about when we talk about consent is pizza, because when do you have pizza? When you want to have pizza. And what's the first question? Hey, do you want to get pizza? What do you like on your pizza? And even if you've been having pizza with someone for a long time, you can say, you want to get the usual or should we go for an everything pizza? And it's a conversation that you get to have. And his point being that, I just made Keith blush.
I don't know why. I was actually,
and it's
sorry.
doesn't transmit over the airwaves.
No, it doesn't, but I am turning bright red. So we're going to go to Steve in Belfast. Hi, Steve, save me, please. It's something about pizza, I think. Anyway, Steve, welcome to Maine Calling.
Hello, thank you. I just wanted to offer an opinion based on having worked in colleges and taught college-level courses and also having been on a Maine school board. And that's just that any time that an institution like a church or a school or the Boy Scouts or someone like that starts trying to keep law enforcement in-house, they wind up covering for themselves. And the fact of the matter is sexual assault is a crime, and it should be prosecuted as a crime. If instead of being treated as a disciplinary thing within the school, because otherwise, honestly, I just think that if it's a rich kid, if it's a jock, if it's a member of a frat that has a lot of prestige on campus, there's so much pressure against actually investigating the crime and actually punishing.
Yeah. So let me ask our panelists and Dr. True, feel free to jump in if you'd like. What are the obligations of bystanders to report not just to the school in this case, but to law enforcement?
That's tricky. When I think of bystander intervention, I think not of reporting something that's already happened, an assault that's already happened, but I think of the bystander as having a really crucial role in that social scene, in the party scene. And it's not, we're not trying to tell people to be a helicopter parent and fly around and be the sober Sally in the corner of the room that's kind of checking in on everyone, but giving us language as peers and friends to be able to say, hey, come with me to change the music. Let's go get a slice of pizza. And pulling someone away from a situation where they may or may not be in danger, but giving them a chance to think about the decisions they're making, right? Being an active bystander, much like sexual assault, is not about taking people's choices away, right? Being an active bystander is giving people time to think about their choices, because sexual assault is having that choice taken away.
Dr. True, what does bystander mean in terms of federal regulations, Title IX, that sort of thing?
Well, I think in terms of bystander training, I have had cases where, as the Title IX coordinator, has come to my attention because of a friend or a witness who has, and then in the investigation, we have talked further with the victim or survivor. But I think one of the points that Shana made early on is that we need to, because this is a crime of power and power has been taken away from the victim, we need to give that power back and let them make choices about what they'd like to see happen. And they may not choose to want to pursue this through the legal system. And what now the Office of Civil Rights has said is if they don't wish to do that, the college or the school does need to investigate and take steps to make sure it won't happen again. So it is a tricky balance because, again, as the caller said, that it's a crime and may best be investigated by the police.
All right, sorry to cut you off, Dr. True. Appreciate it. We're out of time, but thank you for being with us today. Dr. Elizabeth True, Maine Maritime Academy Vice President for Student Services and Enrollment Management. And Shana and Carlin, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having us.
I hope this sparks conversations with listeners.
It will indeed. Shana Nadelson, Executive Director of Speak About It. Carlin Whitehouse is a youth educator at Family Crisis Services. John Keimel ran the board today, and we had Jen Rooks answering your calls. And for links to our podcast, go to mpbn.net/MaineCalling. You can also find our podcasts on iTunes. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. Have a great day.